Welcome to study 41.3. Today's date is February the 9th of 2019. We shall continue with our series, Seven Trumpets. Having studied them out of order by first unraveling the fifth trumpet and then the sixth trumpet already, we shall now seek greater understanding by reviewing our title's namesake, the fourth angel's trumpet. I take you now to Revelation chapter 8, reading verses 11 to the end of the chapter, which is only two verses. You may recall that the fifth trumpet that we've studied extensively at the beginning of this series starts in chapter 9. Then in the middle of that chapter, the sixth trumpet is unfurled to us. We are stepping backward to chapter 8, to the end of it, to unfold the fourth trumpet. Verse 12, and the fourth angel sounded, and the third part, and the third part, and the third part of the sun was smitten, and the third part of the moon, and the third part of the stars, so as the third part of them was darkened, and the day shone not for a third part of it, and the night likewise. Whatever this smiting means, as I parenthetically insert a comment, it indicates that with the smiting of the sun and the moon and the stars, that these celestial bodies did not shine anymore forever. Is that what it says? They did not shine for a third part of it. Oh, you got to brush up on your fourth and fifth grade mathematics now. We step beyond the third grade. We're into fractions now. Verse 13, and I beheld and heard an angel flying through the midst of heaven. You missed that already. He says, and I beheld and heard an angel flying through the midst of heaven, saying with a loud voice, woe, woe, woe to the inhabitants of the earth, by reason of the other voices of the trumpet of the three angels, which are yet to sound. We see here that again the Lord uses mathematical symbolism, the one-third to portray his hidden meaning. It gets complex. You say, well, you don't need to cover this, Brother Wes. We've already discussed it in the last study. But no, I'm telling you that it gets more complex. It gets complex because the two meanings of the expression one-third diverge with each of the trumpets that it is described in. Let us read the sixth trumpet because it expresses the concept of one-third. We have a greater opportunity to microanalyze that expression by turning to Revelation chapter 9, verse 17 and 18. And thus I saw the horses in the vision, and them that sat on them, having breastplates of fire, and of jacinth, and brimstone. And the heads of the horses were as the heads of lions, and out of their mouths issued fire and smoke and brimstone. Already, we see the image, the graphic image. But John has given us an assist here. He's telling us what that means. Verse 18. By these three was the third part of men, by these three was the third part of men killed. By the fire, and by the smoke, and by the brimstone, which issued out of their mouths. We have to know that this third part has a different connotation than the third part of the preceding portrayal described in the fourth trumpet. Because of the third part of men were killed under the fourth trumpet. It doesn't say that they were. It says the third part of the sun, the moon, and the stars were smitten. But if it represented the third part, then you only have two-thirds left, right? Come on, I know you all can relate with this. Whereby the horsemen only have an opportunity to smite half of the rest. If my math serves me correctly. This is mathematical analysis. But the point being that we already know that this third here has a different connotation than the third described before the fifth trumpet. The third part described in the sixth trumpet represents the third part of men, the third part of humanity. It borrows that expression from Revelation chapter 12, which we'll see in a minute. It means the portion of men from the beginning of time through now that followed Satan. It's important to realize because it's only the mustard seed that has unfurled and opened the scripture. And it has done so in parlance to some of its more extensive doctrine declared beforehand. Because it shows you that there's going to be a resurrection. All that are in the grave are going to come forth. They're going to have an opportunity through the evangelization of the horses, which we've shown to be the Enochians. See, we're getting deep into mustard seed theology now. And that portion is going to be evangelized. And then the third that have been deemed to be unworthy of salvation are destroyed with the fire and the brimstone. Thus, the 200 million horsemen, which represent the angels that ride the prefigurative horses, are the ones that execute the judgment. So don't let anybody tell you that Derek West is telling people to start executing judgment. I don't know where to get fire and brimstone, other than from outer space. Manifestly, the sixth trumpet represents the destruction of the totality of humanity that follows Satan. John chapter 16 gives us a little bit of insight so that we can hammer home this doctrine even more firmly. A lot of times as a carpenter, you put up a board. One nail just doesn't do it. You've got to reach into your tool belt and get your hammer and nail and hammer it home with another point of doctrine. We're going to put three nails into this doctrine. Is that all right? Good. John chapter 16, verse 7. Nevertheless, I tell you the truth. It is expedient for you that I go away. For if I go not away, the Comforter will not come unto you. But if I depart, I will send him unto you. When he is come, he will reprove the world of sin and of righteousness and of judgment. But wouldn't it be nice, Lord, if this Comforter were made available to the generations beforehand? Perhaps they would have had an opportunity to embrace the light. Well, this is what the trumpets are trying to show you. They will be, when they are given their opportunity to respond to the evangelization of the horses that were depicted in Under the Fifth Seal. So the Comforter is going to convict the world of sin and of righteousness and of judgment. This conviction could only be the gospel message that's pervaded not under the seventh seal alone, but under the seventh seal as it unfolds the seven trumpets. Is that getting complicated? See, the seven seals represent the light and truth that was endowed to the planet, although it's merely expressed in Revelation after Jesus opens up the book that's in the Father's hands, because the book was sealed with seven seals. The Lord doesn't depend upon everybody, but John 6 says, He elects a servant And he says, through Jesus, labor not for the meat which perisheth, but for that meat which endureth unto everlasting life, which the Son of Man shall give unto you, for him hath God the Father sealed. Clearly, therefore, this bread, this doctrine, this theology, is conveyed not by a rudimentary understanding, a milk understanding of the ministries of Jesus and Christ. Those who distributed the bread which the Lord admonished you not seek after, but it is distributed by somebody else, the Son of Man, a person whom the Father hath sealed. If his seal wins me everlasting life, then it could only be the seventh seal. For none have received everlasting life beforehand. Do you follow me? And in the midst of the seventh seal, then we break out the seven trumpets. But the Spirit comes to reprove the world of sin and of righteousness and of judgment. Of sin because they believe not on me. In other words, anybody who didn't recognize the name of the Lord and believe on it, which is everybody throughout the history of the world until the mustard seed, they need to be convicted that their sins cannot be removed until they embrace the understanding of Christ. That's why he says in Matthew chapter 7, judge not that ye be not judged. First cast the beam out of thine eyes. Then thou shalt see clearly to remove the mote from thy brother's eyes. I'm loosely quoting for the sake of brevity. But the point that pertains to our lesson here is it says, of righteousness, because I go to my Father, and you see me no more. I go to my Father, and you see me no more. Amazing. Christ says, not only that he's going to go to his Father, showing that he wasn't with his Father, showing that his Father and he were different, but likewise he said, ye will see me no more. How are we going to explain the meaning of his emphasis? Hopefully there's a message to explain that abstract concept that needs to be integrated into our path of truth has been broadcast in the fourth trumpet. But the point that I want to take you to is this, and of judgment. See, when you talk about fire and brimstone and smoke, you're talking about judgment. Of judgment because the prince of this world is judged. Now, Satan is judged. What Satan is going to do is he's going to tell the universe, I can't be all wrong. Look at the people that follow me. It's been 6,000 years. Only a handful have followed Christ. But see, with the unfurrowing of the sixth seal, the gospel is pronounced throughout the world and a large harvest is reaped from all generations. And then the Father has the responsible. They didn't have the opportunity to embrace me because they didn't know my name. But now look, they've all come to me. And those that didn't, you can have. They can have your hell. Which takes me to Matthew chapter 25, verse 41 through 46. Just reading this, truncated from its full context. Then shall he say also unto them on the left hand, depart from me, ye cursed, into everlasting fire, prepared for the devil and his angels. You didn't have to be assigned to the fire, but because you've rejected my word, you've become qualified as one of his angels. His angelic forces are not just those in heaven when he was at war with Michael that followed him, but his angelic host represents those on earth who rejected my word and continued forward to follow him. Therefore, when we talk about a third, we're talking about the portion of men on earth that have followed Satan. That's why Revelation chapter 12, verse 2 through 4 says, and she, being with child, cried, travailing in birth, and pained to be delivered. And there appeared another wonder in heaven. And behold, a great red dragon, having seven heads and ten horns and seven crowns upon his head. And his tail drew the third part of the stars of heaven. The third part of the stars of heaven. And his tail drew the third part of the stars of heaven and has cast them to the earth. And the dragon stood before the woman, which was ready to be delivered, for to devour her child as soon as it was born. So the third part, as depicted in the sixth trumpet, pertains to the portion of humanity that has followed Satan and become part of his angels. Who are the devil's angels? All humans, since the beginning of time, who unite with Satan in his war against Michael, which is Christ. Be they human, or be they former angelic stars. Necessarily, therefore, and unequivocally, with nil an iota of doubt, the third part of men who shall be destroyed by brimstone from the 200 million horsemen represent earthlings aligned with the dragon, Satan, along with the angels that followed him in his warfare beforehand in heaven. I show that as a contradistinction because we are really zeroing in microscopically on the mathematical expression one-third. Revelation 8, to reiterate, verse 12, and the fourth angel sounded, and the third part of the sun was smitten, and the third part of the moon, and the third part of the stars, so as the third part of them was darkened, and the day shone not for a third part of it, and the night likewise. Brother Hotef gives us an assist here by showing us that the sun, the moon, and the stars, prefigurative of Israel. They were those who were ordained by Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob to enlighten the earth. Well, understand, Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob are not prefigured in the fourth trumpet. You have to go back to the third trumpet to find more about them. But just as a matter of definition, God blessed Jacob, and his seed was endowed with the responsibility to enlighten the earth. Jacob marvelously gives to us affirmation of this theme as we read Genesis chapter 37. Joseph was hated of his brother because he won his father's special love. But even in this dream, he made Jacob, his father, scratch his head. I wonder about that boy sometimes. That's what he thought. And verse 9 tells you his dream. And he dreamed yet another dream and told it his brethren and said, behold, I have dreamed a dream more. And behold, the sun and the moon and the 11 stars made obeisance to me. And he told it to his father and to his brethren. And his father rebuked him and said unto him, what is this dream that thou hast dreamed? Shall I and thy mother and thy brethren indeed come to bow down ourselves to thee, to the earth? Jacob gives us the interpretation. The dream makes reference to Jacob being the sun. We'll see that a little bit more clearly. His wives being the moon, those who reflected his light, and his sons being the stars. Well, that's good to know, except for the fact that we found out in Revelation, by the opening of the fourth trumpet, that a third part of the sun, the moon, and the stars are going to be smitten. Let me just read to you a message from V.T. Hotef. He begins by saying, this being true, then, the stars are obviously figurative of the church membership. And hence, the smiting of them, along with the sun and the moon, symbolically reveal a punishment upon ancient Israel. But only a third part of them was smitten. So it follows that the Israelite nation falls into three parts. One of which was smitten. And as the nation's history embraces three distinct periods, first, from the Exodus from Egypt to the possession of the Promised Land, second, from the occupation of the Promised Land to the captivity in Babylon, and third, from the deliverance from Babylon to the advent of Christ. Therefore, during one of these periods, they were smitten. From the interpretation of these solar symbols, sun, moon, and stars, not to be gainsaid, the fourth trumpet is seen to reveal the punishment which came upon the Jewish nation in the period of the kings. For it was in these days that the nation, parentheses stars, was taken into Babylonian captivity. Thus resulted a spiritual darkness in the earth, as depicted by the darkness of the third part of the day and of the night. That's V.T. Hotif, Tract 5, Final Warning, page 52. The Bible, with V.T. Hotif's affirmation, places the fourth trumpet before Calvary. Remember, we said that the fifth trumpet was the events that unfurled as the gospel went through the Gentiles. The star came down from heaven with the key to unlock the bottomless pit, and the locusts sprung forth therefrom. That was the fifth trumpet. We're talking about the fourth trumpet now, and it's dealing with the period going backwards from Calvary to the Babylonian dispersion, the time when Israel lost her royal power, lost her ability to shine in the earth. Thus we see that the third part of the sun, the moon, and the stars was smitten. I place special emphasis on the third part. But before we delve any more deeply into that emphasis, let me just pose the ponderable and then give you the answer. How could this be? How could Jacob define the sun as being a reference to himself, the S-U-N, as being a reference to himself, when the Bible says that the sun represents Christ? Give you a clue. The Lord told us in John chapter 16, I go to the Father and you see me no more. That leads us to the first answer to the ponderable. Jacob was the vicegerent. That's what the Pope claims to be. We're not laughing at that. We're just recognizing that part of the Christian community understands that concept of somebody ruling instead of God. It just wasn't the vote, that's all. Vicegerent, that's a big word. What does it mean? Gerent is a Latin word, which means one that rules or manages. You could therefore ask yourself the same question, how could Christ be the manager and ruler of the planet when he endowed that license or authority to the faithful and wise steward, the one whom we were commanded to watch and to look for? The second answer to the question, how so? Remember, I told you about the nails in our tool belt. You see, we're going to put three nails in this question as well. The first was that Jacob was the vicegerent, the one to reflect Christ on the earth, because we're not going to see Christ anymore. The second we find is Genesis chapter 32. We'll see the sun rises, not on the Jews, but on Jacob. I say not on the Jews because people want to refer everything to the Jews. But this is make reference to the father of Judah. Judah was the fourth son. He had 12 sons. He had 12 stars, including Joseph. Therefore, you can't appropriate to yourself to be his only star. Verse 28 of Genesis chapter 32. And he said, thy name shall be called no more Jacob. Now, what does he mean by thy name? He's talking about his identity. The day is going to come when you're no longer going to be a thief. That day could not occur until the opening of at least the seventh seal. I didn't say trumpet, I said seal. Couldn't be, because we were commissioned to watch for the thief. Jacob begins his ministration before he ascends to the pinnacle top of the temple. He begins his administration as a thief. Thy name shall be called no more Jacob, but Israel, for as a prince hast thou power with God and with men, and hast prevailed. Verse 30, and Jacob called the name of the place Peniel, for I have seen God face to face, and my life is preserved. And as he passed over Peniel, the sun rose upon him. And as he passed over Peniel, the sun rose upon him, and he halted upon his thigh. After his struggle with Christ, the sun and fruition of that prophecy rose upon Jacob, which not only was literal, but it was a metaphoric expression to show that his seed would be a light unto the world eternally. It's just that a third part was smitten. Genesis chapter 28, verse 20. And Jacob vowed a vow, saying, if God will be with me, if God will be with me, So he says, I'm not God. I want God to be with me. What does God with me mean? It means he's Emmanuel. God with us. If God will be with me and will keep me in this way that I go and will give me bread to eat and raiment to put on so that I come again to my father's house in peace, then shall the Lord be my God. So we see that God is with Jacob. As an addendum to that very point, let me refer you to Genesis chapter 27. Oh, I think that we're getting a lot of history that will help us to understand the fourth trumpet. It's only a two-verse trumpet, but it's got a lot of depth to it. And Genesis chapter 27 explains it further. See, Jacob was not the firstborn of Isaac. Now, Isaac was the son of Abraham, you may remember. And he only had two sons. Esau was the firstborn, the one who was deserving of the blessing of Isaac. Jacob was the secondborn. But Jacob coveted, as any good thief does. Jacob coveted Esau's blessing, and he usurped it from him. And as a result, Isaac gave it to him, and out of integrity, he honored that commission. And he said, verse 29, let people serve thee, and nations bow down to thee. Be lord over thy brethren, and let thy mother's sons bow down to thee. Cursed be everyone that curseth thee, and blessed be he that blesseth thee. Oh, I don't believe you should bow down before any man. You haven't been following the instructions given in Matthew chapter 24 because it tells you to watch for the coming of the thief. It tells you that the Lord is going to make him ruler over all that he has. We've seen from John chapter 16 that visually, as Israel petitioned in Deuteronomy 18, we're not going to see Christ again. He's going to project his light through the faithful and wise steward. There's another expression here. Be lord over thy brethren, and let thy mother's sons bow down to thee. Cursed. Maybe we didn't pay attention to that prophecy before. But there's a way that you can be blessed and a way that you can be cursed. Cursed be everyone that curseth thee, and blessed be he that blesseth thee. I think we might have to circle back to cover more of the impact of that statement as we advance. Let us just summarize this section merely by realizing that Christ's honor on earth is contingent upon the Son of David declaring his identity, his name. Isn't that what Isaiah chapter 60 tells us? Verse 1, "Arise, shine, for thy light is come, and the glory of the Lord is risen upon thee. For behold, the darkness shall cover the earth, and gross darkness the people, but the Lord shall arise upon thee, and his glory shall be seen upon thee. And the Gentiles shall come to thy light, and kings to the brightness of thy rising." The Lord hides his glory on his servant. This is the fruition of the blessing that Jacob stole from Esau. And this is the reason why the Lord did not commission us to watch for Esau's emergence, but watch for the emergence of the thief. The glory of the Lord is risen upon us, but we cannot forget the third part of Jacob's election was projected to fail. The kings of Israel were Christ's vicegerents on earth, and they collapsed. Thus, it should be noted that Israel has already received their fire. How is it you're going to escape the fire and brimstone? The Lord already burned them, as we've shown in many studies. They were already smitten, the third portion of them. Now they seek their baptism by fire from it. Yet and still, while they burn, a curse is placed upon those who curse them. That's why I like Matthew chapter 23, verse 37 through 39. See, it's one thing for the Assyrian to trounce upon people all over the globe. That was their commission. But for them to curse them, to relegate to them standards that are not befitting for humanity, which they extol, eliminates them from the blessing. We're not through drilling back on that theme. Let us continue forward to Matthew chapter 23, verse 37. "O Jerusalem, Jerusalem, thou that killest the prophets, and stonest them which are sent unto thee, how often would I have gathered thy children together, even as a hen gathereth her chickens under her wings, and ye would not. Behold, your house is left unto you desolate." Desolate. 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 "Behold, your house is left unto you desolate. For I say unto you, ye shall not see me henceforth till ye shall say, Blessed is he that cometh in the name of the Lord." Now we see that the firstborn of Israel is going to happen in stages. Not the totality, but the leaders. Instead of 12 stars, 144,000 stars, the sons of America's former slaves that have gone through this burning experience are going to step forward. And they're going to step forward by looking to the Jacob, who's transformed into Israel, by recognizing the Son of David and pronouncing upon him a blessing. "Blessed is he that cometh in the name of the Lord." Therefore, we've refined this experience of Jacob. We've looked into the fourth trumpet, and we saw the period of his punishment, of his curse. See, you can't curse him because the Lord has already delegated for him his curse. And then we see that his ascension is going to come when Jerusalem emerges. But Jerusalem is merely a subset of Israel. You had 10 tribe Israel, 2 tribe Judah, and the elders which they selected to represent them to the king in Jerusalem. They were like Congress. So the descendants of that delegation are going to be the ones that are not going to see the Lord henceforth till they say, "Blessed is he." So they're going to recognize the Lord's presence on another person. "Blessed is he that cometh in the name of the Lord." That is a description of Israel's regeneration. But doesn't it make it a little bit quizzical in your minds as you're thinking? The third part was smitten. And if they're going to be resurrected and baptized from their fire, that means there has to be another part, right? Come on, you all. Fifth grade mathematics scholars? That means there has to be a fourth part. That fourth part brings us to a rather lengthy scripture that I would like to open up to you. We find it in Numbers chapter 22. What it does is it sort of summarizes the fourth trumpet. Let's go to Numbers chapter 22. Let's read verses 1 through 6. And the children of Israel set forward and pitched in the plains of Moab on this side of Jordan by Jericho. And Balak, who? Balak, the son of Zippor, saw all that Israel had done to the Amorites. And Moab was sore afraid of the people, because they were many, and Moab was distressed because of the children of Israel. And Balak, the son of Zippor, was king of the Moabites at the time. And he sent messengers, therefore, unto Balaam. So Balak, the king of the people of Moab, sent messages to Balaam, the son of Beor, to Pethor, which is by the river of the land of the children of his people, to call him, saying, Behold, there is a people come out from Egypt. Behold, they cover the face of the earth, and they abide over against me. A little bit of background. You remember the story of Lot, right? Lot was a citizen of Sodom. He was the only male survivor. Manifestly, then, his posterity represent the children of Sodom, those who have descended from that experience. Moab was his firstborn. In the course of time, you may also recall, Abraham's son Isaac passed the blessing of Abraham and of Isaac on forward to Jacob. This text brings us some 450 years later. Not in the period of the fourth trumpet, but in the period just before that, which would be the third trumpet, the trumpet that we have not discussed yet. But just giving you a little bit of background, this episode relates 400 years later in the posterity of Israel and Moab when they met as two separate nations. Moab's king is Balak. And this historic interlude applies to the Christian church. 1 Corinthians chapter 10, verse 11. Now all these things happen unto them for ensamples and are written for our admonition upon whom the ends of the world are come. Manifestly then, this lesson, along with many other lessons, were recorded so that we could reach back and gain understanding, because now we're at the end of the world, with the day when the judgment hour has been declared. Moab, therefore, prefigures the Protestant age, pseudo-Christian forces, who, after the Catholic age, which is defined by Sodom, sought to allure Protestant Christians into Masonry. He desired that they curse Christ's elect. They wanted to establish their own power. They didn't want the elect of God to be the light of the world, because if that were to occur, then that would be a demerit to Satan's warfare, because he would receive disempowerment over that servant. Remember in the garden, the Lord said, And God blessed them. And God said unto them, Be fruitful and multiply and replenish the earth and subdue it, and have dominion over the fish of the sea and over the fowl of the air and over every living thing that moveth upon the earth. Well, Satan says, we got to curse Israel, because if we don't, it's going to mean our own demise. because Christ's vicegerent is going to have dominion over us. We've been locked to and constrained to the parameters of earth. In so seeking to curse Christ's elect, they sought to defeat Christ. Let's read some more. Verses 7 through 22. And the elders of Moab and the elders of Midian departed with the rewards of divination in their hand. And they came unto Balaam and spake unto him the words of Balak. See, they practiced their divination, and as a result, like many of the athletes you see today, like many of the politicians, like most of the movie stars, they got their rewards from divination. So Balak thought that he could impress Balaam with these rewards. And they spake unto Balaam, and spake unto him the words of Balak. And he said unto them, Balaam speaking, lodge here this night, and I will bring you word again, as the Lord shall speak unto me. And the princes of Moab abode with Balaam. And God came unto Balaam, and said, what men are these with thee? I want you to underscore one point here. Balaam wasn't a Hebrew, but he was a prophet of God. Not Balak, but Balaam. This is why Balak sought for him to curse Israel. He didn't want to smite Israel with a third part. He wanted to smite the totality of Israel. And Balaam said unto God, Balak the son of Zippor, king of Moab, has sent unto me, saying, behold, there is a people come out of Egypt, which covereth the face of the earth. Come now, curse me them. Peradventure I shall be able to overcome them and drive them out. And God said unto Balaam, thou shalt not go with them. Thou shalt not curse the people, for they are blessed. And the princes of Moab rose up, and they went unto Balak, and said, Balaam refuseth to come with us. And Balak sent yet again princes, more and more honorable than they. Okay, I sent you a movie star yesterday with money. I sent you your favorite athlete. Now I'm going to send you the head of Congress. Now I'm going to send you somebody on my chief of staff. Men that are renowned in the earth. And Balak sent yet again princes more and more honorable than they. And they came to Balaam and said unto him, thus saith Balak, the son of Zippor, let nothing, I pray thee, hinder thee from coming unto me. Wow. Disregard your God. Look at our stature. Look at our preeminence. How is it you're going to allow anything to supersede our grandeur? For I will promote thee unto very great honor. This is the temptation that we see today. And I will do whatsoever thou sayest unto me. Come therefore, I pray thee, curse me this people. Now understand, Balak said, I'll do whatever you want. But we see the tricks now that are going on as all of these majestic men of honor are knocked down. Look at Bill Cosby. He's sitting in general population in a prison now. So evidently you can't trust the promises of Balak when he says, I will do whatever you say. He didn't got the power to do whatever you say. And Balaam answered and said unto the servants of Balak, if Balak would give me his house full of silver and gold, I cannot go beyond the word of the Lord my God, to the less or more. And God came unto Balaam at night and said unto him, if a man come to call thee, rise up and go with them. Verse 20, but yet the word which I shall say unto you, that shall ye do. So God is telling him now that he can go with them, but he still has to preach God's word. This is commensurate, I give you a running clue, to the Adventist church in the world. You're allowed to fraternize with the other churches, but you got to keep fidelity to my word. Mm-hmm. And Balaam rose up in the morning and saddled his ass and went with the princes of Moab. Now, all the years I've been reading this, I've been wondering, what did Balaam do wrong? God told him to go. And God's anger was kindled because he went. But he just told him to go, didn't he? A lot of times we think that we know the spirit of prophecy. And we think that we could measure and govern our lives by that which we've discerned the spirit of prophecy has relayed onward to us. But God told him to go after he told him what to say. Because if he went before he told him what to say, then it would be disaster. Somebody is going to go to the nations armed with the commandments of God, with the testimony of Jesus, and then he's going to say exactly what God tells him to say. And God's anger was kindled because he went. Balaam ran prematurely. Balaam sought to evangelize the globe prematurely. And the angel of the Lord stood in the way for an adversary against him. Now, this is not Christ, but this is the angel of the Lord, the Holy Spirit. He stood in the way. If you get the picture, Balaam saddled his ass. Yeah, I'm going to use that expression. The Bible uses it. And he's riding his ass along this narrow path. Then all of a sudden his ass stops. He couldn't go to the left or to the right, else he would jam Balaam's legs against the wall. Only other alternative he could do was he could be seated. But he couldn't proceed. And the ass saw the angel of the Lord standing in the way, and his sword drawn in his hand. And the ass turned aside out of the way and went into the field. And Balaam smote the ass to turn her into the way. But the angel of the Lord stood in the path of the vineyards, a wall being on this side and a wall on that side. And when the ass saw the angel of the Lord, she thrust herself into the wall and crushed Balaam's foot against the wall. And he smote her again. And the angel of the Lord went further and stood in a narrow place. So he came closer, where was no way to turn either to the right hand or to the left. And when the ass saw the angel of the Lord, she fell down under Balaam. And Balaam's anger was kindled. He smote the ass with a staff. See, now you understand why the Seventh-day Adventist Church has been smiting your expletive deleted all these years. You see the vision that they don't see. We know this is applicable to the Adventist experience because of what the angel of the Lord says. And the Lord opened the mouth of the ass, and she said unto Balaam, what have I done unto thee that thou hast smitten me these three times? And Balaam said unto the ass, because thou hast mocked me, I would there were a sword in my hand, for now would I kill thee. So now we see that Balaam represents those elected by God that would want to kill Davidia. They do so by disfellowship, by separating them from the books. But they would want to kill them. Only thing that precludes them is they don't have authority. They don't have a sword in their hands. And the ass said unto Balaam, am not I thine ass, upon which thou hast rid ever since I was thine unto this day? Was I ever wont to do so unto thee? And he said, nay. Whatever Balaam and his discourse with the ass was, it's symbolizing it's a discourse between two Gentile powers. One was in control. They were riding and the other was subordinate. Yet they were with this prefigurative Balaam all these years. It wasn't the ass's burden to smite Balaam. He wanted to save him. But then the Lord opened the eyes of Balaam, and he saw the angel of the Lord standing in the way, and his sword drawn in his hand. And he bowed down his head and fell flat on his face. And the angel of the Lord said unto him, Wherefore hast thou smitten thine ass these three times? Behold, I went out to withstand thee, because thy way is perverse before me. So Balaam was on a perverse trail. The Lord didn't want him at this time, until he had instructions upon what to say, to commune with the other churches that were controlled by Balak. No matter how much honor. Verse 33, And the ass saw me and turned from me these three times, unless she had turned from me. Surely now also I had slain thee and saved her alive. That's how we know that it's referring to the slaughter. The angel of the Lord said that I would have slain you and preserved the ass. Mm-hmm. The ass was doing justly. Mm-hmm. You were doing wickedly. You were going without the full force of inspiration. And Balaam said unto the angel of the Lord, I have sinned, for I knew not that thou stoodest in the way against me. Now, therefore, if it displease thee, I will get me back again. So I'll turn back. And the angel of the Lord said unto Balaam, Go with the men, but only the word that I shall speak unto thee, that thou shalt speak. So Balaam went with the princes of Balak. The Lord did not even give him the word to speak, but he told him to go under the commitment that he would speak the words that the Lord was going to give to him. This could only represent the mustard seed advent during the time of its ordination, during the time when the Lord has commissioned us to take the rod and speak unto the mountains and to show them His endowment upon Israel. Now let's read Numbers 23, verse 1 through 10. And Balaam said unto Balak, remember Balaam, God's spokesman, not given the word of God yet, said unto Balak, Build me here 7 altars, and prepare me here 7 oxen and 7 rams. And Balak did as Balaam had spoken. And Balak and Balaam offered on every altar a bullock and a ram. And Balaam said unto Balak, Stand by thy burnt offering, and I will go. Preadventure, the Lord will come to meet me, and whatsoever he showeth me, I will tell thee. And he went to an high place. This reminds you now of the Mount of Transfiguration. This reminds me of the time when the Lord separated the disciples. Separated Davidia by alluring his 3 disciples up to Mount Transfiguration, whereby they would have unfolded to them the fullness of Christ. The other 9 disciples we've shown represent the Protestant age churches. And that represents the 7 altars that Balaam and Balak offered sacrifice. The 7 churches, by the Lord's design, I don't want to make this too complicated, but we've shown in other studies, have been, as expressed in Hosea chapter 1, the results of Hosea taking a wife of whoredom. Hosea being Jesus, right? Hosea was commissioned to take a wife of whoredom after the Lord condemned Israel for their lapses. That was his remedy. Therefore, he was agreeable to the interspersing of theologies with the people of divination. These televangelists you see on television, they've got all the money. They've reaped the rewards of Balak. Balaam was not to receive any of those rewards. He was to separate himself. And by that separation, he's transformed into the spokesman of the Lord. Preventure, the Lord will come to meet me, and whatsoever he showeth me, I will tell thee. And he went to an high place. And God met Balaam, and said unto him, I have prepared 7 altars, and I have offered upon every altar a bullock and a ram. And the Lord put a word in Balaam's mouth, and said, Return unto Balak, and thus shalt thou speak. That word could only be a reference to the testimony of Jesus. For it is the gospel that you're supposed to speak when you're exalted above the hills. When you are sent, as Micah 6:1 tells you, Hear ye now what the Lord saith, Arise, contend out before the mountains, and let the hills hear thy voice. Hear ye, O mountains, the Lord's controversy, and ye strong foundations of the earth, for the Lord hath a controversy with his people, and he will plead with Israel. Which neatly brings us back to the fourth trumpet, right? Because the Lord is telling you that though yesterday Israel was banished, it was merely because a third part of them was smitten. But the day is going to come of revisitation, the day of the fourth part of Israel. Back to Balaam. And he returned unto him, and he stood by his burnt sacrifice, he and all the princes of Moab. And he took up his parable. Therefore he had all of the lofty ears and eyes of the people. He was on worldwide television. Everybody was intent to hear because they thought that their Christian churches would be established by the furtherance of Israel's demise. Revisiting the text, verse 6, And he returned unto him, and lo, he stood by his burnt sacrifice, and he and all the princes of Moab. And he took up his parable and said, Balak, the king of Moab, hath brought me from Aram out of the mountains of the east, saying, Come curse me, Jacob, come defy Israel. How shall I curse whom God hath not cursed? You could see the senators and the congressmen, the emissaries of the UN. You could see all of the wealthy multi-billionaires. Uh-oh, what's he going to say? This is not what we petitioned him to say. He's supposed to curse Israel. They've been on a rampage clearing out the land of all of the devil worshipers. And now they've come to our doorstep. We need empowerment to destroy them. We don't have it. We've heard that God is with Balaam. And now he's telling us, How shall I curse whom God hath not cursed? Or how shall I defy whom the Lord hath not defied? For from the top of the rocks I see him. I see him. From the top of the rocks I see him. We just read that text, right? Contend thou before the mountains. And from the hills I behold him. And lo, the people shall dwell alone. And shall not be reckoned among the nations. So the day is going to come when the nations are not even going to identify Israel. They're going to dwell alone. They're not going to be recognized. Who can count the dust of Jacob? And the number of the fourth part. Who can count the fourth part of Israel? Let me die the death of the righteous, and let my last end be like his. So the glory is not in the third part, it's in the fourth part. Balaam said, Let my last end be like his. Balaam emerges from the 7 churches of unclean theology. Churches of cooperation between the ministers of the Lord and the ministers of Balak. He, during the Davidian epic, ascends above Christendom. Only then, per Numbers 23:5, does he receive the Lord's word, the testimony of Jesus. Only then can he fulfill the Lord's commission of Matthew 28, verses 18 through 20. And Jesus came and spake unto them, saying, All power is given unto me in heaven and in earth. Go ye therefore and teach all nations, baptizing them in the name of the Father and of the Son and of the Holy Ghost, teaching them to observe all things whatsoever I have commanded you. Whatsoever I have commanded you. And lo, I am with you always, even unto the end of the world. Then he declares the rod from the top of the mountains. As a result, Balaam, to the shock of the august body, had the audacity to defy masonry. They're the ones that implored him to come. It wasn't time for the shepherd's rod message under B.T. Hotif, under M.J. Bingham, under Jimmy Bingham, or under the Branch Movement, or under the Carmelite Movement, under Martindale, under George. It wasn't time for them to broadcast their light before the world. Why? Because the Lord didn't tell them what to say. That's why. And to do so prematurely will only win for you the sword of the Lord. But we were talking about Balaam having the audacity. He was obedient to the commandments of the Lord. Matthew chapter 10, 27. What I tell you in darkness, that speak ye in light. What ye hear in the ear, that preach ye upon the housetops. You got no business ascending to the temple mount yet. You've got to hear what the Lord has to say to you. Verse 28. Fear not them which kill the body, but are not able to kill the soul, but rather fear him which is able to destroy both soul and body in hell. You don't have to worry about anybody pronouncing evil on you, plotting evil on you, seeking to destroy you, because the Lord tells you in Matthew chapter 25, verse 34 through 37, Then shall the king say unto them on his right hand, This king could only be the son hidden upon Jacob, the son of David. Then shall the king say unto them on his right hand, Come ye blessed of my Father, inherit the kingdom prepared for you from the foundation of the world. How do they get admittance into the kingdom? Because they blessed Israel. They didn't curse them. When it came time to administer as good Samaritans,
remember, testimony of Jesus' commandments win life.
They opened up to them divine and righteous medium of self-preservation. They gave them their welfare. I was a stranger and ye took me in. Then shall the righteous answer him, saying, Lord, when saw we thee and hungered, and fed thee, or thirsty, and gave thee drink? When saw we thee a stranger, and took thee in, or naked, and clothed thee? See, the identity of Israel, the 144,000, they were not reckoned among the nations. And the king shall answer, and say unto them, Verily I say unto you, inasmuch as ye have done it unto one of the least of these, my brethren, ye have done it unto me. This is the blessing that they purveyed upon the sons of America's former slaves that won for them their salvation. The other group, they fought hand, tooth, and nail every step along the way to preclude them from bringing these people to partial resuscitation. They cursed them. It turns out that the fourth trumpet was purveyed to us so that we can understand Israel's humiliation and then Israel's regeneration. We can understand their clemency and their redemption and their salvation. That's why it says, Revelation chapter 8, verse 13, And I beheld and heard an angel flying through the midst of heaven, saying with a loud voice, Woe, 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 to the inhabitants of the earth, by reason of the other voices of the trumpets of the three angels which are yet to sound. Now this angel is declaring a message That's independent of the fourth trumpet. Verse 12 tells us the message of the fourth trumpet. It tells us about the smiting of the sun, the moon, and the stars. Thus, really, the fourth trumpet is only enveloped in verse 12. So who could be this angel? Where does he come from? John says he heard him. And he had the power to authenticate the light that was about ready to come. He flies in the midst of heaven. He could only be the angel defined in Revelation chapter 7 who has the seal of God. Therefore, between the blast of the fourth trumpet and the fifth trumpet, he gives an interrupting message to alert those that are hearing the significance of the fifth, the sixth, and the seventh trumpet. Does that make sense? Hopefully it does. Because understand that the Lord says, labor not for the meat which perisheth, but for that meat which endureth unto everlasting life, which the Son of Man shall give unto you, for him hath God the Father sealed. Therefore this man, this Jacob, being converted to the Lord's spokesman, being the recipient of the Lord's words at the end of the day, is the one who has the authority to summarize the next three trumpets. Why? Because he has the seal of God. The seal of God is only opened up in the last day. You look puzzled. Therefore, when the seal of God is opened, it accompanies a message along with pronouncements. And this person whom John heard, this angel flying through the midst of heaven, had a message and instructions to declare a woe of warning for the final three trumpets. By virtue of the fact that he flies in the midst of heaven, he's not in heaven. Yet he's elevated above the earth. He could only be the one that has the message and the wisdom to seal the 144,000. The one described in Revelation chapter 7. And after these things I saw four angels standing on the four corners of the earth, holding the four winds of the earth, that the winds should not blow on the earth, nor on the sea, nor on any tree. And I saw another angel ascending from the east, having the seal of the living God. And he cried with a loud voice to the four angels to whom it was given to hurt the earth and the sea. Verse 3 of chapter 7, saying, hurt not the earth, neither the sea, nor the trees till we have sealed the service of our God in their foreheads. And I heard the number of them which were sealed, and there were sealed 144,000 of all the tribes of the children of Israel. Therefore, this angel pronounces a woe in between the fourth and the fifth trumpet to show the people in the last days that they're going to be held accountable should they deem to curse Israel. And should they so deem to curse Israel, they're not going to receive the benefits that are afforded to them of salvation in the fifth and the sixth trumpet. They're going to be recipients of the devil's fire and brimstone that was prepared for him and his angels. Sister White says, then I saw another mighty angel commissioned to descend to the earth and to unite his voice with the third angel. So if he's another angel and he unites his voice with the third angel, he's got to be the fourth angel and give power and force to his message. Great power and glory were imparted to the angel. That hasn't happened yet. That happens after the Seventh-day Adventist Church and its heightened stature has a servant to ascend to the top of the mountains to declare the Lord's righteousness. Great power and glory were imparted to the angel. And as he descended, the earth was lightened with his glory. This servant is Christ's vicegerent. Isaac promised him to be Lord over thy brethren, and let thy mother's sons bow down to thee. The light which attended this angel penetrated everywhere. This message seemed to be in addition to the third message, joining it as the midnight cry joined the second angel's message in 1844. That's early writings, page 277. He comes as a thief. He continues to teach. That's why the Lord rewards him to be ruler over all that he hath, as Matthew 24 and Luke 12 show, because he's feeding meat in due season. Part of that meat is the sealing message of the seventh seal, and part of it is the trumpeting message that is declared as the seventh seal has been opened. And when he had opened the seventh seal, there was silence in heaven, you see. And then that's when the seven trumpeters began to blast. Manifestly then, the Christian world, heretofore being ignorant, are warned that should they curse Israel, they're going to be cursed. That message is only applicable to us today, because beforehand they didn't know Israel. Isn't it good that they weren't reckoned among the nations? Because there's a lot of folks that want to take back some of their curses. There's a lot of folks that want to extend some of their blessings. The Lord said, cursed be he that curseth thee, and blessed be he that blesseth thee. Jerusalem represents the sons of America's former slaves that suffer under the yoke of the Assyrian. Therefore, I close the study with a question. How say you? Do you want to bless the fourth part of Israel? Or has Balak bribed you to receive his evil spirit, his Masonic affiliation? Have his great men flattered you by their post of power? Has this caused you to violate Christ's command and curse the fourth part of Israel too? Such is futile regardless of his crimes, for Jacob has already had his punishment under the outline of the fourth trumpet. And with that, I bring the study to a close.